Good morning. Certainly good to be with you here. We are very excited. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. I can tell you we already feel like this is a reunion of sorts between the fact that not only there are some folks that I've known for a long time in my life, but just the connection that we have with you, that you have shared so generously in your financial support of us, as well as in your prayers. That means a great deal. It really and truly does. And thank you so much for that encouragement. I'll tell you that I like to go about a gospel meeting. I'd liken it to much like a basketball coach and his team at the very end of a game when it's real close. It's within a shot, and a coach calls the timeout, and he brings the team over, and he pulls out his dry erase board, and he draws up a brand new play and says, okay, we're going to do something we've never done before. No, that's not what he does. He says, we're going to run the same play we'd run 1,000 times, and he's going to remind them again of that for the 1,000th and first time before they go out onto the court and try to execute it. In other words, we're going to be talking about stuff that you're familiar with, things that you probably already know, not going to be anything new and shocking. I'm here to encourage you to remember the things that you already know and to hopefully build up your faith and to build up our faith as we work to be pleasing to God. When it comes to the story of Jesus and his ministry, when we look at some of the things that go on in his life, of course, there's a lot of things that we could really look at. But in particular, one of the things I find very interesting is that people always seem to be searching for Jesus. They always seem to be looking for him. And if you know anything about the Lord's work, he was fairly popular while he was here, in as much as people followed him, people sought after him, they had various reasons to seek him wherever he went. And that is a good thing, right? Well, not necessarily. And I want us to take some time here this morning to think about some things in relationship to those who sought Jesus. Look, if you will, in Mark chapter 1 with me. This first group that we're going to look at are the masses and his family, kind of lumping them in together just for time's sake. Mark chapter 1, starting with verse 32. The text says, at evening when the sun had set, they brought him to all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed, and the whole city was gathered together at the door. And then he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast them out, cast out many demons, and he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. And Simon and those who were with him searched for him. When they found him, they said to him, everyone is looking for you. But he said, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I have come forth. Word of Jesus and the power that he demonstrated was spreading, and people were searching for him. So much so, the text tells us that the whole town had gathered together outside of the door where the Lord was meeting with folks. Well, these people had sought him for his miracles. But Jesus says, you know, I'm not here to perform miracles. I'm here to preach. I'm here to share the gospel. That is ultimately what my purpose is. Notice also with me in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. We'll start with verse 46. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside, seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, look, your mother and brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak with you. But he answered and said to the one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. If you put this same story together with the other accounts in the Synoptic Gospels, and in fact John as well to some extent, you see a picture of Jesus' family, and they're more than a little perturbed with the fact that Jesus is doing these very things. In fact, they think he's nuts. They said, you're out of your mind. You're beside yourself. And it's drawing unwanted attention. So his family was searching for him to bring him back to his senses, so to speak. And of course, that is the point, especially in John chapter 7, where John tells us that his brothers in particular, they didn't believe him. They didn't believe that he was anything that the people were claiming or that the works that he was doing, in fact, were claiming that he was. Well, a second group there are the Jews and the Pharisees. As I mentioned, John chapter 7, let's kind of take note of that text here. John 7, starting with verse 10. John 7, verse 10 beginning. But when his brothers had gone up, then he also went up to the feast. Then he also went up to the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Then the Jews sought him at the feast and said, where is he? And there was much complaining among the people concerning him. Some said, he's good. Others said, no, on the contrary, he deceives the people. However, no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. You may know this, but as John uses the term the Jews, he's basically kind of using that as an all-inclusive term for the Jewish leadership. So we could certainly lump in the Pharisees with this particular group. So John says that the leadership, the Jews, were looking for him. They were searching for him. And a few verses before, Jesus stated his desire was to keep a low profile because he knew that they were searching for him. Well, throughout Jesus' entire ministry, these folks sought after him. And it culminates ultimately with what we see in John chapter 18. And I think this passage in particular is very striking for a number of reasons, but one in particular that we'll note here. John chapter 18. After the John chapter 17, we know that great intercessory prayer that Jesus offers. Now it's time to deal with his crucifixion, his arrest. In John chapter 18, Jesus had spoken these words. He went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. And Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came with lanterns, torches, and weapons. And Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, whom are you seeking? And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said to them, I am he. And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Have you ever read that and wondered, what's wrong with these guys? Are they having a hard time with their balance? They fell over. I want you to stop and think about this for a minute. What I think John is describing goes something like this. Jesus is in the garden. If you know anything about the garden, it would have been nighttime, and it's not like they had electric lamps all over the place. And it's not like everybody knew Jesus' face. And so these soldiers, this detachment is out there, and they're in a place where there would have been it was a public place. And so they're looking around. They know he's probably somewhere in this area. And they're kind of looking around, and they see some guys. And this guy happens to say, who are you looking for? And they say, oh, we're looking for Jesus, this guy, Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, well, that's me. And they stumble and fall over. Now stop and think about that for a minute. How much had the Jews and the leadership of the people of God, how much must they have vilified Jesus for the soldiers to react that way? I mean, they acted like he had the plague. I mean, they acted like he was just this awful, murderous man that was, just by being in his presence, was frightening. I mean, they were scared. That's pretty bad. And we know everything about Jesus was tender and loving and compassionate and patient. He wasn't this bad guy. But clearly that's how he had been made out to be. This group of people had been dead set from the beginning to stop Jesus, the Jews and the Pharisees. And so they were searching for from prejudice and from hostility. But finally, this other group of people that searched for Jesus over in John chapter 12, and that would be the Pharisees, or excuse me, the Gentiles. John chapter 12. John chapter 12, we'll start with verse 20. Now there were certain Greeks among those who came up to worship at the feast. And they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." If you recall, after Lazarus was raised, the Pharisees basically said, everybody's going after Jesus. Everyone's, the whole world's going after him. Everybody wants him. And they're not saying that because they're happy about it. They're saying that because they're frustrated that this guy that they've deemed as a heretic and a liar and worthy of death is getting all this great attention, and they're furious about it. He's raising people from the dead. Well, that's kind of a big deal, but yet they had this mentality towards him that he was nothing more than a nuisance to be dealt with. And so the Greeks, Gentiles even, hear about this, and they come to the disciples and they say, "Where is he? We want to see Jesus." And this isn't the first time that Gentiles have sought after him. We've got instances like the centurion, the Canaanite woman, the Samaritan woman. Jesus was in fact prophesied, the Messiah was, that there would be interaction between him and the Gentiles. The Gentiles would come to seek him. We have various groups that search for Jesus for various reasons. But of course, there's one group that's obvious that we haven't talked about, and that is those who had a mind to be his disciples. People who were genuinely interested in Jesus. And yes, Keith, you were right. The stuff all came up at once, but that's all right. You're just going to ignore the first 3 points for me. And don't skip ahead. It's all right. But I want to suggest to you this morning that it's very important for us to think about why we are here. We're all here right now for, I'm assuming, a specific reason. I'm assuming that we're all here because we are seeking Jesus. But what is our motivation? Why do you seek Jesus? I mean, I want you to really stop and think about that. Do you seek him because you're just curious? Look over in Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23. Starting with verse 7. And as soon as he knew, that is Herod, that he, that Jesus, belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him, it was Pilate to begin with, sent him to Herod, who was also at Jerusalem at that time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he desired for a long time to see him, because he'd heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. And he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood vehemently and accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt, mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. The Bible tells us that Herod wanted to see Jesus for some time. And when he finally gets that opportunity, Pilate says, this Jesus of Nazareth who's stirring up a lot of trouble among these Jews, well, he belongs to Herod, so I'll send him. Up until this point in time, Herod and Pilate did not get along. But history tells us from that point on, there was kind of a decent relationship with the two of them. And so Pilate sent Jesus to Herod, and Herod says, "All right, got this miracle worker here. Perform. Do some tricks. Show me what you got, holy man." And of course, Jesus doesn't say anything. He's quiet. And Herod starts to get upset, and him and his men mock him and ridicule him, and eventually they send him back to Pilate. Herod was curious about Jesus. He wanted to see some cool thing done. Well, you're here today. Why do you seek Jesus? Are your motives somewhat like Herod's? Are you kind of curious about Jesus? I've heard some things about this Christianity. I've heard some things about Jesus that I'd like to look into a little bit more. Now, I'm talking to a room mostly full of Christians, and so I'm not stupid. I know that we've already investigated him more than just a showing, but yet be aware of the fact that these motives can slip into our lives, that we can have kind of just a mere curiosity about Jesus, a lot like Herod, that's really not intending to go any deeper than just perform for me. It's a real motive that people have had in the past and will continue to have in the future. The interest was out of boredom, much more than any pursuit of knowledge or truth. So let me ask you, is the worship of Jesus just something to do for you? Is it something to occupy your time? Is it something expected of you? Or is there something more to it? Why do you seek Jesus? How about that second point we've got up there? Do you seek Jesus to discredit him? Over in Luke chapter 11, before you think that's just absurd, why would anybody be here to discredit him? I want you to listen to something that happens with Jesus interacting with the spiritual guys of the day, the leadership of the day, the people who are supposed to be holy, the people who are supposed to be interested in spiritual stuff. Luke chapter 11, verse 53, "And he said these things to them. The scribes and Pharisees began to assail him vehemently and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him and seeking to catch him in something he might say that they might accuse him." These guys are lying in wait in an attempt to trick Jesus into saying something that would be incorrect or controversial. And the scribes and Pharisees, hey, they're getting up real close and personal. But it's not a good thing. Their proximity to Jesus isn't because they want to be lovey-dovey. It's because they're angry. It's because they've got to prove something. You know, a question that I ask myself about this, if these guys hated him so much, why did they keep coming after him? Why did they keep coming back with questions, trying to trick him up? Why didn't they just leave him alone? Wouldn't that be the thing you'd do? Notice in Luke chapter 16, Luke chapter 16, familiar teaching to all of us, I think. Starting with verse 13, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Excuse me. "Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard of these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, 'You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God.'" Do you realize what Jesus says? He says, you guys are coming after me, asking me all these questions, not because you want to learn, but because you want to find a way to justify what you're doing. So that's what I mean by discredit him. When we ask ourselves, we look at ourselves as to why not just leave him alone? If these people were so against him, they kept coming back because they needed to justify themselves. They needed to prove that they were okay and that he wasn't. Their consciences weren't okay with the fact that he was pointing out their sin. He pointed out that you can't love God and money. You've got to have a spiritual mindset. If you have a carnal mindset, you can't have God. If you've got a spiritual mindset, then you can't pursue the world and its goods at any cost. You can't do that. It's impossible. Well, they don't like that. And Jesus says, you're trying to justify yourselves. We face things like this today as Christians. We've got atheistic friends or neighbors or co-workers. Occasionally, the atheistic person will just, whatever, you believe what you believe, I believe what I believe. But we're living in a culture now where atheists are becoming evangelistic. And they're becoming very aggressive. Why is that? It's the same reason that these Pharisees and scribes were doing this with Jesus. People have to justify themselves. They're not okay with the fact that you believe you have an understanding that is superior or more informed than theirs. They've got to prove to make themselves feel better that you're wrong. There are people who seek Jesus because they've got to prove that he didn't have all the answers. that what he said about marriage or about murder or what he said about lying or what he said about being carnal and worldly and materialistic, that he's not to be complete. You don't take that all the way. Because if we can discredit him that, well, he's just a lunatic or just a liar, then guess what? We don't have to listen to him. We can pick and choose what we like. Because he's just a man and, people make mistakes. Why do you seek Jesus? Do you seek him to use him? John chapter 6. John chapter 6, verse 25 beginning. John chapter 6, starting in verse 25. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? And Jesus answered them and said, Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on them. Jesus called out these people in the text because they were seeking him for the wrong reason. He had fed them, and that's a great thing. God, we're thankful for the bounty God gives us. If anybody questions about whether or not I like food, you're not paying attention. And yet he says, you're not here for the right reasons. You're not here because the miracles I worked have convinced you that I have authority to teach you what God expects. You're here because I did some stuff that fed you, and the inference from the context is you're here for continuing meals. And Jesus said, that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to feed your soul first and foremost. These people were seeking him in a selfish manner. And the Bible makes it, and don't get me wrong, the Bible makes it abundantly clear, my brothers and sisters, that seeking after Jesus is the very best thing you can ever do for yourself. And I encourage that because God encourages that. Don't get me wrong. Searching for Jesus is good. But the problem is that if we're searching after him just so we can get what we want out of him and then be done with him, we treat God a lot of times like a genie in a lamp. We pull out the lamp, rub it, poof, there's God. Okay, I want this. Give this to me. And then we cram them back in and stick them back on the shelf. That's not God. God is not there to grant our wishes and then be discarded. God is a relational character, and he wants this to be a two-way street. Our relationship is to go both ways. And yet, so oftentimes, that's not the case. The problem is that folks often seek Jesus just to get what they want from him and nothing more. Is your pursuit of Jesus all about you? Now, I'm going to be honest. Those first 2 points, I doubt many, if anybody here, generally Christians don't have too much trouble with the curiosity part. And maybe there are some who from time to time are looking to justify themselves, and so kind of discrediting Jesus or arguing with him. Well, Lord, but maybe we can fall prey to that too. But this one right here, using him, that takes the taco for a lot of us at times, myself included. I have pursued Jesus in my life just to get what I could from him without much of a mind to ask, what can I give him? My brothers and sisters, that's a serious problem. If you have a child, a son or a daughter, or a friend or a brother or sister who's dating someone, and that person that they are pursuing is a selfish, self-absorbed individual who only ever takes and never gives, and they start talking about long-term, like marriage or anything, what are you going to tell that person, that child, that brother, that friend? What are you going to tell them? Run for the hills. That person is in it for themselves, and they have no mind towards you. If we know to tell our human relatives that that is ridiculous, why do on earth do we think that we're going to pull the wool over God's eyes? That he's not going to know whether or not we're using him. Furthermore, how does that make him feel for after all he's done? And I don't stand here saying this, like I said, being innocent of this. I've been guilty of this. It's a struggle I still have from time to time. But if we're going to examine our motives, we've got to understand we cannot expect this to be a one-way street. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not what a relationship is about. This is a two-way street. Why do you seek Jesus? Is it to love him? I want you to notice over in John chapter 20, after Jesus has died and been buried in the tomb, we pick up with the story with Mary Magdalene, John 20. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. And she ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Jump over to verse 11. But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "Because they've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they've laid him." Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say, teacher. And Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren, say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and to your God." Why did Mary come to the tomb? There was nothing else left for Jesus to give her, so she thought. She wasn't coming there because there was one last gift or one last miracle for him to work for her, again, in her mind. Why do you go to the grave of someone you've loved and lost? Because you love them. She wasn't there for selfish reasons, anything beyond, I love him. He's gone and he meant the world to me, and she's coming there, and she's there to honor him and to show that affection. And using this as an example of what we need to be searching for Jesus for. Do you notice that Jesus even asks her, "Whom are you seeking?" He knows what she's looking for. And I love the way he does it. He says, "Mary." And she turns around and the joy, "Rabboni, Master, Lord, my loved one, there you are." And she goes up apparently, and I can imagine she's hugging him, and he says, "Don't get too attached. I've got to go home so that I can come back and get you all one day." But she's overjoyed. She loved him. That's why we should search for Jesus, folks. Because we want to love him more. Because we want to show our gratitude and our love and our joy at his presence in our lives. And we want more of him. We want as much as we can take. We should learn to love the giver far more than any gift he gives us. And that's maybe some of you have heard of Gary Henry. He's a brother. He's a great writer. He's a great friend of mine and my wife's. And that's a line I stole from him. Learn to love the giver more than the gift. We have problems with that sometimes. Loving the stuff we get from God more than God. We see spoiled children who don't really care about seeing aunts and uncles or grandparents unless they've got presents. And they show up, and there's nothing like having seen a child run straight up to the present, grab it, and run back into the house. Some people might, but everybody knows how embarrassing that is, because all that kid is thinking about is stuff. And we try to teach our children that people are more than stuff. Our Father is trying to teach us He is more than stuff to us. And that we want to learn to search Him, to love Him. We need to make this our highest goal. We can learn to love our spouses, our children, our parents like this. I'll be honest, when I buy flowers or chocolates or a video game for my wife, yes, we're gamers, we're nerds, I don't do it because I'm looking to get something out of it, although sometimes those video games are two-player. I do it because I like to see her smile, and vice versa. You know, she brings me a big bag of donuts. She likes the big fat grin on my big fat face when she does that. We know what it's like to do things simply to give someone joy. I want to encourage us, my beloved family here, to think about what motivates us to when we do things, when we are trying to reciprocate our faith and our obedience to God, it's because we want to see God smile. Because we want Him to be happy with us. And let me tell you something. It's not a small thing when the Bible says of someone, it pleased the Lord. It's a big deal. And if we learn to make that our top priority, we will live full and satisfying lives. So I ask you again this morning, why do you seek Jesus? You're in an assembly of His people. Do you seek Him because you're just curious? Do you seek Him maybe because someone expects it of you? Or do you seek Him because what you can get out of Him? Or are you here because you want to draw closer to the one who gave His life for you? We sing a wonderful song, I gave my life for Thee. What hast thou given for me? That's a song that is asking a fair question, don't you think? A question that says, Rick, I've given you everything I can give. I'm not going to take away your free will. I'm not going to put a gun to your head and make you love me. God didn't make us robots. He could have. He made us agents of free will because God wants to experience empirically our love. So are we going to give it to Him? Are you seeking Jesus this morning for the right reason? And as Christians, we certainly are striving to have that very sort of motivation. And let me encourage you that if, like me, you find yourself struggling with that sort of motivation, start with learning to do things for other people just because. Because that is the heart of God. And if we will learn and practice on our fellow man, we'll learn how to do it with God as well. And there's a correlation between the two great commandments, love God and love man. And so that friendly advice, if the struggle is there, practice on your fellow man, practice on your spouse, on your children, on your brothers and sisters, your friends, your enemies. That's a real good one. And we'll find that the motivation will be changing. It really will. And we'll start to learn that I can do this. There's nothing like walking away from having done something that made a difference for God and having that small epiphany. This Christianity stuff, I can do this. We can. But it's going to take effort, just like it does with any relationship. It's going to take effort. And it's going to take our commitment to being less selfish than we oftentimes are. Why do you seek Jesus this morning? I hope that you'll think soberly about that, and hopefully the rest of the week we'll be able to examine some more things that will kind of go together. Really, this is a best of Boz week. All the sermons I feel like I did a good job with, but they all kind of go together because that's what happens when you're using the same material. We're going to try to think about searching for Jesus in different ways and the gratification that comes from that and the responsibility that comes as well. Thank you.